Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Good Tuesday morning. Vanessa Dunha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tomeo this morning, Chief Communications Officer and Communications Evangelist with Epiphany Communications, Professional Development Trainer, Leadership Development Coach, and Communications Consultant, also host of Epiphany on the EW10 affiliate Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Today, Saint of the Day, Saint Oscar Romero. Today we honor him, the patron saint of persecuted Christians and a powerful witness to courage in the face of injustice. Appointed Archbishop of San Salvador in 1977, Saint Romero quickly became known as the voice of the voiceless, using his radio sermons to defend the poor, the oppressed, and victims of violence during one of El Salvador's darkest periods. He knew the risks of speaking truth to power, yet he refused to be silent. On March 24, 1980, he was assassinated while celebrating Mass, martyred for proclaiming human dignity and the gospel. He was canonized in 2018. Saint Oscar Romero is now recognized as a patron of El Salvador, the Americas, persecuted Christians, and Christian communicators, reminding us that faith must always move towards justice, mercy, and the defense of the vulnerable. Saint Oscar Romero, pray for us. Today we have Steve Ray will be joining us. We'll be talking about the meditations on the Stations of the Cross. And I love the Stations of the Cross. In fact, Ronnie and I made it part of our Lenten journey that we are going to go to the stations every Friday. And I've really enjoyed it. I went last Friday with another couple cousins of ours. We went and went out to dinner and just talked about how beautiful that Stations of the Cross was. And we'll talk with Steve today of, you know, why did the Stations of the Cross begin, you know, and how did the Stations of the Cross begin? So why and how? These are typical reporter questions. What, why, how, where, who, what, when, how, and why? These are the questions we ask. Why did the Stations of the Cross begin? How did they begin? What are the names of the Stations of the Cross? And did you know there was names, right, of the Stations of the Cross? Do we know exactly where the stations are in Jerusalem? Are all the stations biblical? Are they found in the Gospels? Steve will talk with us about that. Why is it a good idea to pray the Stations of the Cross? I love this, you know, really kind of meditate. When I was praying the Stations of the Cross, I closed my eyes to really listen to the priest, really walk us through the stations, or the deacon, whoever it may be. So Teresa Tomeo and I, and Deacon Dom and Ronnie and I, we went through the Stations of the Cross at St. Joan of Arc right before she went to Italy. And it was beautiful too. There was beautiful music at the stations. But I close my eyes and really kind of meditate on the words and pray, just really feeling the Lord speaking to me personally. And why do our usual crucifixes do a great injustice? Steve Ray will talk with us about that. So, you know, we'll examine each one of them individually. Jesus condemned to death. Jesus carries his cross. Jesus falls the first time. Jesus meets his mother. Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry the cross. Veronica wipes the face of Jesus. Jesus falls the second time. Jesus meets the woman of Jerusalem. Jesus falls the third time. Jesus is stripped of his garments. Crucifixion. Jesus is nailed to the cross. Jesus dies on the cross. Jesus is taken down from the cross. And Jesus is laid in the tomb. So we'll be going through all of that today with Steve Ray. It is 4 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. And now it's time for the news with EWTN. And we'll start our news with the weather update from Tammy Trio.
Starting in the northeast, it's a mix of sun and clouds with temperatures in the 30s in the north and the 40s in the south. The mid-Atlantic and east coast will see partly sunny skies with temperatures topping out near 50 degrees. And mild and pleasant weather continues in the southeast as highs reach the low 70s under a mix of sun and clouds. The big story is the southern plains where temperatures are surging well above average, climbing into the low 80s from Texas through Oklahoma with dry and breezy conditions. And that heat is spreading into the Midwest where temperatures jump into the 50s and 60s, especially across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. The central plains are warm and breezy with elevated fire weather concerns due to the dry and gusty winds. Sunny and hot in the southwest as temperatures are in the 90s to the low 100s. The heat is on in Southern California as well as temperatures could reach some record highs with temperatures in the 80s. Northern and central California stay mostly in the 70s. And in the Pacific Northwest, clouds and periods of rain continue, especially west of the Cascades. That's your national forecast. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
25 of the U.S. and Israel's war against Iran. Ross Cullen reports that President Trump says the U.S. has held productive talks with Tehran, but Iran denies any discussions after taken place.
It follows remarks by U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday that Tehran was ready to make a deal to bring the war to an end. It's reported that intermediaries have been in contact to convey messages between Tehran and Washington. President Trump also mused that the Speaker of Parliament could be the U.S. pick for the new leader in Iran.
Trump has ordered a five-day pause on any attacks on Iranian power plants. The Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway that typically sees a fifth of the world's maritime oil traffic, remains closed to most vessels as Iran threatens attacks on commercial shipping. Iran has also continued to fire missiles at Israel, while other Gulf nations report intercepting more Iranian drones and missiles. Fighting has intensified in Lebanon, where Israel is carrying out attacks, and in Iraq, where pro-Iranian groups are fighting the U.S. Cullen says there are reports that President Trump is looking at the Speaker of Iran's parliament as that country's potential new leader.
The health of the Supreme Leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, is unclear because since he was picked, he has released one written statement and has not been seen or heard from amid rumors that he was severely wounded in the attack which killed his father, the former Supreme Leader, at the start of the war.
Runway number 4 remains closed at LaGuardia Airport as the NTSB continues to investigate Sunday's deadly collision between an Air Canada regional jet and an airport fire truck during a landing. Scott Pringle reports.
Investigators say they're going to be interviewing the air traffic controller who could be heard saying that he messed up as he was dealing with a separate emergency. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, he was asked about the air traffic controller staffing situation.
We're a couple controllers short in total, but it is a well-staffed airport. Again, 33 certified controllers.
Data reportedly shows the plane going around 100 miles per hour as it plowed into an airport fire truck on the runway, killing the two pilots and injuring dozens of others. NTSB investigators have recovered the cockpit voice recorder and the data recorder. In New York, I'm Scott Pringle.
The TSA is losing hundreds of workers as the partial government shutdown continues. More from Mark Mayfield.
According to the Department of Homeland Security, 400 TSA workers have quit since the shutdown began on February 14th. Of the TSA officers who quit, the agency said almost half have over 3 years of experience and a third have over 5 years. The agency also noted that for more than half of last week, there was a national call-out rate of 10% at TSA. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The Los Angeles Unified School District is expected to start the process of renaming schools and include the name Cesar Chavez. Mark Mayfield fills us in.
Last week, several women told the New York Times that the late labor leader sexually assaulted them when they were young women and girls. Dolores Huerta, who co-founded the United Farm Workers with Chavez, now says he raped her twice. Today, the LAUSD is expected to start the process of renaming several facilities. Those include the Cesar Chavez Learning Academies in San Fernando and the Cesar Chavez Elementary School in El Sereno. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Sunday, March 22nd, marked the end of the public veneration of St. Francis's remains exposed for a month in the lower church of the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi. This was the first time his relics were displayed, and more than 370,000 pilgrims from all over the world came to see them. The public veneration was part of several events scheduled this year to commemorate the 800th anniversary of the saint's death. In the evening, after last pilgrims had passed through, the saint's remains were placed back in the crypt of the basilica in a private event only attended by the friars, and which marked the end of the public veneration. Nonetheless, the theme Saint Francis Lives will continue throughout 2026. It will accompany all the initiatives marking the 800th anniversary of the saint's death, highlighting the enduring vitality of his message and his ability to speak to all. Gas prices keep rising across Southern California as the war in Iran continues. Mark Mayfield with the numbers.
AAA now says the average price for a gallon of self-serve regular in Los Angeles County is $5.90. On average, it's 4 cents less expensive in Orange County. In Ventura County, gas is going for $5.82. It's $5.76 in San Bernardino County. In Riverside County, the average price for a gallon of gas is $5.77. I'm Mark Mayfield.
An Irish immigrant who helped shape the heart of America history is being honored in Washington, D.C. The Irish Embassy recently celebrated James Hoban, the architect who designed and oversaw construction of the White House, as part of events leading up to America's 250th anniversary. This from EW10 News. Ireland's ambassador, Geraldine Byrne Nason, highlighted Hoban's legacy, noting that Irish immigrants left what she called Irish fingerprints on America's founding historians, say Hoban relied on fellow Irish workers and enslaved laborers to complete the mansion in 1800 after the British burned it during the War of 1812. Hoban returned to rebuild it. Hoban also helped establish St. Patrick's Church, the oldest Catholic parish in the nation's capital, and contributed to major federal buildings, including the U.S. Capitol. The White House Historical Association honored Hoban as at his gravesite this week, and the Irish Embassy has opened a new exhibit, The Emerald Thread, showing Ireland's influence on America's early story. Here's Mark Mayfield with the latest technology news.
OpenAI is reportedly planning on nearly doubling its workforce by the end of the year. The Financial Times reports that the ChatGPT creator is looking to increase its staff from roughly 4,500 to about 8,000. The move reportedly to keep up with or stay ahead of the competition, like Anthropic PBC and Alphabet Incorporated. Demonstrators gathered outside of Anthropic's San Francisco headquarters on Saturday, demanding a stop to artificial intelligence development, at least temporarily. Representatives with the group Stop the AI Race say that they are seriously concerned about the threat that AI poses to the human race. Meta stock took a hit after the collapse of the Metaverse last week. The Facebook parent announced it would no longer be adding virtual reality experiences to the platform, marking a halt to the once ambitious Mark Zuckerberg project. And Amazon reportedly looking to dive back into the smartphone pool. Reports say Amazon's developing a new device known around the company as the Transformer. Reuters reports that the generative AI built into the device would essentially eliminate any need for an app store. Tech Report, I'm Mark Mayfield.
DoorDash says they'll help U.S. and Canadian delivery drivers facing big gasoline bills during the Iran war. The company says the program will run through April 26th and can save drivers at least $1 per gallon. It will also feature weekly relief payments for Dashers driving at least 125 miles. With the average price of gas in America expected to break $4 this week, gig workers are being hit hard. Stock futures are surging this morning after President Trump announced the U.S. has held constructive talks with Iran and will hold off targeting Iranian energy infrastructure. At last check, Dow futures were up 1,200 points or 2.6%. S&P 500 futures were up 170 points, also about 2.6%, with NASDAQ futures had risen 624 points, more than 2.5%. It is 14 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. We're going to take a break, and coming back, Steve Ray will be with us. Convert and regular guest of Catholic Connection and EWTN, Steve Ray is with us. We're talking about meditations on the Stations of the Cross. Steve, I love this topic, and I can't wait to dive in. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very good, Vanessa. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I love the Stations of the Cross. I love praying the Stations of the Cross. So let's start with why did the Stations of the Cross begin, Steve?
Well, it began because we are a sacramental, devotional people, and we want to enter into things. And as an evangelical Protestant, it's usually a Bible and a notebook. But as a Catholic, we actually view things sacramentally, that there's actual grace involved. And because we're devotional, we want to enter in. And people went to Jerusalem, like I've done so many times, joking with you just as we began the show, that I was asked if I wanted to join a group on the Stations of the Cross before I gave a talk last week. And I bowed out. I said, after you've walked the real Stations of the Cross 100 times, it's kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah.
But people went there and they walked along the road and it's so moving. And you get to Calvary and then you end up at the tomb. And the Bible's coming alive for you as you walk through these. And then they wanted to bring that back to their home parishes. They wanted to share it with other people. So it was a way of reliving the sufferings of Christ during Holy Week. And it's a way of entering into this that people wanted to bring back to their parishes what they had experienced there. And there was never, numbers. There was anywhere from 11 to 30 of them at the beginning that wasn't standardized. Now we have 14, but there was at one time 11 all the way up to 30 stations. And in fact, I think it was Pope Benedict that even came up with a different group of Stations of the Cross. And sometimes it includes the resurrection. I always like to include the resurrection because you don't want to leave Jesus in the tomb. You know, you want to get him out of there. So and it looks like, and I'll just finish up with this, it looks like it probably began with St. Francis. He was in the 1200s. He's the kind of one that brought it back and put it in chapels, and not just that you experience it, but that he actually set it up with, like, the creche scene with the manger.
Yes,
he's the one that started that. So he's such a clever guy bringing that all back. And the Franciscans standardized it in the 14th century, and then Pope Clement XII made it official in the 1731. So there's a little bit of the history of how it got started.
So we talk about the why and the how. What are the other names for the Stations of the Cross, Steve Ray?
Well, whenever we're dealing with things in the Middle East and in the Bible, you have different languages involved. So we call it the Stations of the Cross. It's just the spots along the way, so to speak. But it's also called the Way of Sorrows because it was a sorrowful thing. And in Latin, that's Via Dolorosa.
Yeah.
The word is. And when you go through Jerusalem, that's the name of the main road. When you go, when we start, I take pictures of it right there. It says Via Dolorosa. That's the actual name of the road that goes through the old city of Jerusalem. And then in Latin, it's also called the Via Crucis, the Way of the Cross. So those are some of the names of them. And it's interesting that we know exactly where all these stations were. But what the point is that we know where it began and we know where it ends. It began at the Antonia Fortress, where Pilate was and where Jesus was being tried. And it ends at the cross and the tomb. So there's point A and point B, and the Stations of the Cross get you from point A to B. And I don't think anybody knows exactly where these things might have happened until you get to Calvary. But we're not actually walking on those stations because the ground level in Jerusalem is 9 feet above street level at Jesus' time.
Oh,
so
wow.
And the things change. They get built up. So where we're walking, Jesus really walked 9 feet below where we are. And there are places in Jerusalem where they subterranean where you go down and you can actually see the pavement from the time of Christ.
Wow. I did not know that. So are all the stations biblical? You know, are they found in the Gospels, Steve?
They're biblical in the sense that they're likely or expected, but there are 9 of them that are specifically mentioned in the Bible, and there are 5 that are not. For example, Veronica's Veil, Mary meeting Jesus. It never says that Mary met Jesus along the way, or that Veronica was there. And we'll get to Veronica down the road here. No pun intended. But but the other ones are that Jesus fell the first, second, and third times. That never says that he fell while he carried a cross. But if you're carrying a 110-pound beam of wood on your back and you've just been whipped and lacerated and beaten to the point of almost to death, then to falling with that big thing on your shoulders is 110 pounds. Some of us would fall even if we hadn't been beaten within an inch of our life.
Sure.
So So there's 9 that are specifically mentioned and 5 that are not.
So are we going to get into how the 5 that are not ended up as part of the stations?
Yes.
Okay.
As we get through.
Okay, we're walking down the road. Okay,
yep.
So let's continue this walk, and we'll get more into that. Why is it a good idea to pray the Stations of the Cross, Steve?
Well, for a few things, it helps us to enter into His sufferings, to realize it, because we get busy in everyday life and we don't think about it. And it's a good time to just go and you stop and you meditate. What must it have been like? My dad didn't get me a television when I was a boy. He said, we're going to read books and we're going to walk in the woods and I'm going to teach you to observe things, to use your imagination, which you will lose if you watch TV your whole life. So we have to have like a sacred imagination and imagine what it would be like to enter into it. And we get a sense of the ultimate price that he had to pay for sin. It shows us how wicked and how damaging sin is because of the suffering Jesus had to go to reverse it. So it gives us, it reminds us of the ultimate price that was paid and what we owe him. But it's also very nice because we always talk about going on a pilgrimage, but you don't have to go to Israel or to Lourdes and Fatima. By the way, we only got a few seats left on our trip to Lourdes and Fatima in Ireland and St. Paul cruise coming up. But you don't have to go on a pilgrimage like that to experience the spiritual blessing. You can do this can be a spiritual pilgrimage right in your own parish. And it's a community. It's also we're to pray together. So this is a nice way that the Catholic Church has these means where we can have community prayer. We can pray together as a family. So those are all some of the good ideas of why, and also the good preparation for getting ready for Easter and the cross. And the last thing I would say is it asks us the question when we do it, are you willing to go the whole way for Jesus? He said, if you're not willing to take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of me. And so as we're doing this, we're doing it spiritually, but he's asking us also, if times get bad and persecution comes, will you really do this for me? Would you accept the cross for me? And that was the most brutal way of dying. The Persians invented it in about 100 BC, and it was considered by many the most painful, audacious way to die. They kept men alive for up to 10 days on a cross alive. And the crucifixes we see today are pretty sanitized. The reality was very brutal. You saw that in Mel Gibson's movie.
Yeah.
So why it's a good idea to do it, to keep all of these things before our minds.
You know, Father John Ricardo also always talks about we wouldn't fully understand what that scourging was if it wasn't for Mel Gibson's movie, because all it said in the scripture is he was scourged, and we don't really know what that is until we see that.
You know what's interesting about that, Vanessa, is that they did know because they saw it every day.
Yeah.
We don't see it, so we don't know what it was like.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They did. And for example, when Spartacus, before the time of Christ, when he had all of his slaves, when they finally captured Spartacus, they took 600 of his soldiers who were former slaves, and they put them all on crosses along the Via Appia. So when you got off the ship and you walked into Rome, you went past 6,000 men hanging on crosses. Mm-hmm. They knew what this was like. It was a billboard, so to speak. When they crucified people, and this wasn't just Jesus, people were crucified every day outside of the gates of Jerusalem or Rome or anywhere else. It was a huge billboard.
Yeah.
And the billboard said, don't ever defy the power of Rome, because if you do, this will happen to you.
Yeah. So, Steve Ray with us. Steve, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about Stations of the Cross, and you're going to walk us through the individual stations. Don't go away. We're going to continue with Steve Ray. The convert Steve Ray's with us, walking us through the Stations of the Cross, giving us a wonderful overview of how it all got started and why we pray the stations. And now he's going to walk us through the individual stations, you know, Steve, and we can examine each one individually and meditate on its meaning, cultural context, biblical basis, everything about each station. So let's start with Jesus is condemned to death.
Okay. So we got to pretend it's 5 o'clock in the morning, because we get our groups up about 4:30 and we arrive at the first station at 5 o'clock in the morning when there's no crowds.
Wow.
And we arrive at the Antonia Fortress, and that's where Pilate was, and that's where Jesus was condemned to death. He's known this is going to happen. He's been prepared for it. In fact, when he was baptized in the Jordan River, baptism represents death. We die, and then we're raised again out of the water. So when he was baptized, it was already, in a way, forecasting that he was going to die and come back alive. And it's also, when you think of him being condemned to death, it's a scandal, because there was a scandal of the incarnation that God became man. And then the scandal got worse when God, who became man, was now hung on a cross. And I think that when the angels heard what was going on, they all looked at each other and their jaws dropped open and they said, what? He's going to do what? And this is just way going too far. God created them. They don't even love him enough all the time. This is going way too far. The angels thought he's going to go down and become a man and then he's going to die for them. So this is, I think, the response of the angels when they heard he was going to do it, and then when it was actually he was being tried. But then the question comes, he was condemned to death, but who really condemned Jesus to die? Some people have blamed the Jews for that, but the catechism is very clear. You cannot collectively condemn the Jews for doing that. Certain leaders at the time did. But Rembrandt has a marvelous painting called The Raising of the Cross, and he says... He tells us who put Jesus on the cross, who condemned him to death. And guess what? The man raising the cross right in the center has a Dutch painter's beret on his head. It's a self-portrait of Rembrandt. He's saying, I'm the one that raised Jesus on the cross. Mm. And he's looking at you and saying, and it was you too. So don't blame the Jews. Don't blame the Romans. Mm. It was your sins that put him on the cross and condemned him to die. So at the same time that he's being condemned to die, is very interesting, is that across the street, so to speak, right now, even just a stone's throw away from the Antonia Fortress, is where the temple stood, and the people were bringing their Passover lambs to the priest to certify them that they were flawless, blameless, that they could be used for the Passover lamb. It couldn't have any flaws or blemishes. And they were saying, okay, this one is a good lamb to be used. And then they would slaughter the lamb and take them. And Josephus, a historian, tells us that during the time of Christ, there were at times 250,000 lambs slaughtered on Passover.
Wow.
So Pilate, what's happening across the street in the Antonia Fortress? Pilate has the real Lamb of God, same time, and he says, I find no fault in him. This is kind of like the priest saying, this lamb is without blemish. There's nothing wrong with him. Take him away for the sacrifice. Pilate is saying, Jesus, I find no fault in him, and they take him away for the sacrifice. So condemned to death. This is all happening at one time. It's really quite stunning. So that's a little bit about him being condemned to death. It was it wasn't just Jesus. They were executing people all the time, mendicants, thieves, people like that, that they were cleaning out society. And Jesus was just one of many. This was no big deal, except that the Jews were really adamant about this guy because he was threatening their whole economy, their whole way of life. So he was a little bit special, but just one of many.
So let's walk into Jesus carrying his cross, Steve.
Okay. Now, Jesus says something quite audacious, unreasonable, you could almost say. If you have a group of followers and they see people just struggling with their crosses through the city of Jerusalem and then being hung on those crosses and kept alive for days and crows and vultures ripping the skin off their flesh and screaming up there totally naked on the cross, and he looks at you and he says, by the way, unless you're willing to take up your cross your cross and follow me. You're not worthy of me. If you were starting a club and you, that was one of the rules, that in order to join this club, you have to be willing to take up a cross, be whipped and beaten and nails driven through your hands. Nobody would join that club.
No.
And yet they do for Jesus. Yeah. They do. And they saw this happening all the time. And Jesus is now carrying the cross. And the disciples had run, but they still knew what was going on. And they knew this is what he's requiring of them. But it's also, it looks back, this is beautiful. I just, you know, a couple of years ago, I finished my book on Genesis that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And there you have Abraham, who takes his only begotten son to Mount Moriah to offer him as a sacrifice. And that is a beautiful picture of Isaac. He carries the wood of the cross, of the sacrifice up Mount Moriah. He carries the wood to burn. It's the wood of the, it says he carried the wood of the sacrifice on his back, and Abraham found a ram with his head stuck in a thorn bush. And what happens? God the Father, who also has an only begotten son, brings him to the same place. Mount Moriah is the top of Jerusalem, and he's going to offer his only begotten son. And what is his head stuck in? A crown of thorns, just like the ram was. And it says that Jesus carried his cross just like Isaac carried the wood of the sacrifice. So the whole story of Abraham and Isaac in Genesis 22 is pointing forward to God the Father bringing his only begotten son. But at that point, there's not a substitute. He actually does die. And so that, now crucifixion is by many considered the most painful way to die, not only because it hits the median nerve of your hands, we'll get into that a little bit, but it is also embarrassing because they strip people naked. This is the way the Romans did it. And I wrote a whole article about this because people don't like hearing this, but it's really what happened. They strip people completely naked at the cross. And it's not only is it painful, but it's utterly humiliating and degrading. And it goes on and on, can go on for hours and hours and even days. So wow. Jesus saw it daily, and he dreaded the agony in his human. He had to dread it just like you and I would. So they were, he could have, another thing is, as he's carrying the cross along, the people on the streets, they're trying to sell their wares. This is just a narrow cobblestone street, and the crossbeam was probably 6 feet across. And he's stumbling along, and people are saying, get out of my way, quit knocking the tomatoes over. You know, what are you doing? Get that guy out of here. And so they're not seeing him as the Son of God. They're just seeing him as one more criminal interrupting their day, getting blood on the road in front of their shop. And Jesus could have called 12 legions of angels when all this was happening. 12 legions, that was 72,000, I think. But anyway, say 72,000, 12 legions of angels that said he could have called them and released him from this agony. That would be 72,000 angels. That's just a big number. But he's carrying his cross, and people are laughing at him. People are poking at him. He's struggling along. He's already pained for a whole night without sleep, being beaten and whipped. His tongue is all swollen in his mouth. He's hungry. He's thirsty. And he's on his way to Calvary.
We have to take a break, Steve Ray. We'll be back with more. We've been walking through the Stations of the Cross with our guest here this morning, Steve Ray, and we're on Station 3. We're going to get through the rest of them, Steve. Jesus falls the first time. Let's walk through that station.
Okay, yeah, we got 14 minutes. So Jesus falls the first time. Not mentioned in Scripture, but certainly reasonable. He's carrying what's called the patibulum. That is the cross beam. It weighs about 110 pounds. It's rough wood. His hands are tied to it, presumably. He's walking through the streets of Jerusalem, uneven streets, by the way, not a nice blacktop walkway. It's all uneven. And he trips and he falls because obviously he probably fell more than three times. And the Shroud of Turin shows it looked like a broken nose. And if that's the reason for that, of course, is if you're carrying a 110-pound beam of wood on your back and you fall forward, what is going to stop your fall? Normally your hands, but no, in his case, it's his face. he does a header. Boom, hits the pavement, breaks his nose, pushes it over. It's reasonable to believe this happened. And the soldiers start looking for a man to assist him because they doubt he's going to make it all the way on his own. The fourth station says Jesus meets his mother Mary. Now, that's not mentioned in the Bible, but it does say that he met the holy women. Of course, Mary was one of those holy women. And one of my favorite scenes is in Gibson's movie where Jesus is a little boy and he falls and skins his knee, and Mary comes slow motion running to save him and pick him up and cuddle him. But at the end, in this one, Mary runs toward Jesus, who falls with a cross, and she runs to him slow motion, but she can't get to him because the soldiers push her away. And she's realizing now what it meant, that a sword will pierce your soul also. So she's watching her little child, in a sense, die, being prepared for death. Number five is Simon the Cyrene helped. And by the way, Mary, it says Jesus met his mother Mary on the way. Mary was at the cross. So,
yeah,
of course, she was following there. She went with them, the other holy women. So that is not mentioned in the Bible, but it certainly would have been the case. Simon the Cyrene helps Jesus. I like to think of Simon the Cyrene like a business guy. Cyrene is in Libya, North Africa, and he's up here probably visiting. I like to think of him in his new three-piece suit and his briefcase, and he's on his way to a business meeting, and they grab him and say, "Hey, you're going to carry the cross." And he says, Why me? You know, in protest. But he was in the right place at the right time, and it was the luckiest day of his life. He could have taken another road and gone a different way, but he was there on that road, a divine appointment. He willingly assisted, and because he got so close to Christ and the cross and the blood, he became a believer. He's a convert. How do we know that? Because later in the Gospel of Mark, which was written about 30 years after the fact, it mentions Alexander and Rufus, who were Simon's sons. And they were important celebrities in the church. So obviously, he became a Christian along with his sons, Alexander and Rufus, who then became leaders in the Catholic Church in the early centuries. So this guy, lucky day that he met Jesus and helped carry his cross. Now, Veronica wipes the face of Jesus, number six. This is a much later tradition. This is also not mentioned in Scripture. Holy women did follow Jesus, very courageous to follow him. But the name Veronica actually is two Latin words that mean true icon. Vera is true, icon is icon, the true image. So her name means true image of Christ on the cloth. It's an old tradition, but it's not ancient tradition. But if you want to see the real face of God, you go to Montepello and you see the face cloth of Christ. So now we get to seven. Jesus falls a second time. Again, not mentioned in the Bible, but as we walk through, one time we went with Teresa, by the way, when we were doing the Stations of the Cross during Lent, and it started to snow, and we were slushing through 2 or 3 inches of snow on the Via Della Rosa, and it was very slippery. And to just think it could have been snowing the day Jesus was carrying his cross. It could have been cold and wet and slippery along the way. No wonder he would fall a second time. No one cared. He was just another criminal. Get him out of our way. He's weak and exhausted. And there is a tradition that there were 6 wounds, not only in his hands and his feet and his side, but the 6th wound was the shoulders bruised and torn from carrying the cross. Number 8, we're moving through here. The holy women meet Jesus. Yes, they did. These were the daughters of Jerusalem. And so we say that Jesus comforted the women on the way to Jerusalem. Excuse me, but all he says is that don't weep for me. Weep for yourself, because the days are coming and the mountains are going to fall. And it's terrifying. It's about the destruction of Jerusalem, and anything but comforting them. It terrifies them. But they did follow Jesus. And along the way, and John did too, but the other disciples all ran. And when you get to the inside the Holy Spirit sepulcher, there's a little cupola, and that says this is where the holy women stood looking up at Jesus on the cross. These are the women that followed him. Now it says he falls a third time. That's number 9. Trying to get through these quick. What I like to think of this one is he's already now at the city gates. He's heading towards the city gates, and he falls, and his bloodshot eyes, with sweat and blood in his eyes, he can't even hardly see. He looks ahead, and he sees Calvary, and he sees the place where he's going to die, and he knows that's where he's headed, and he came down to earth for this moment, and he looks up, and he sees there it is. He could call all the angels to save him, but he knows that he's going into a new garden, by the way, because it says that the cross and the tomb were in a garden. John wants you to know that, so you think back to the Garden of Eden, where the first Adam at a tree brought about death. Now we've got the new Adam stepping into a new garden at a new tree, and he's going to bring about life. So there's a whole, we could do a whole hour on that one. And
wow.
Then Jesus is stripped of his garments. And this, we do this Station of the Cross when we're in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and we're up on the top where Calvary was, and there's even a picture of them. They're taking his clothes off and laying him on the cross, and we're right there at the moment, at the place where this happened. And we think of like a Band-Aid being ripped off of a sore. When I was a kid, my mom said, okay, we'll just rip it off. Oh, you know, the blood had dried on that Band-Aid, and Jesus had that robe put back on him with all of that serum drying now on that ripped up skin. They rip off his, ouch, they rip it all off of him, and they're taking him now to the cross to be, they're going to nail him to the cross. And it even said in Psalm 12, they divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Jews were very modest, and this was ultimate humiliation, being stripped naked. Remember that Adam and Eve were naked, and then because of sin, they had to be clothed and kicked out of the garden. Jesus came into the garden clothed, but then to restore our innocence, he was stripped naked at the cross.
Yeah.
So you got all
of the humility of that. The humility of that.
Yeah. And just totally humiliating. Now, Jesus nailed to the cross, that in your wrist, right at the base of your palm, that's where the nail would have gone, not in the middle of the palm, but in the, right at the palm, but right by the wrist. There's a median nerve, and even during World War II, they said morphine would not kill the pain of that nerve being damaged, and that's
wow.
They knew exactly where to put the nail because they were good at this, torturing people. They put it right through the median nerve. And now Mary, the crucifixion, he's nailed to the cross, and Mary all of a sudden remembers Simeon saying, "A sword will pierce your soul also." There's so much we could say about that one. But now he dies on the cross. This is a great scandal that God himself comes down in the form of man and dies. And the whole idea of the nature just rebelled, I think. It says the rocks quake. There was earthquake, and the rocks split, and the sun was blotted out. It's like this nature going, that's our creator. No, this is wrong. And it's, I think I'd like to see it as nature rebelling against it. But Jesus's crucifixion was merciful in a way, but that's because he was only on the cross for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. There were recorded accounts of men being left on the cross for a week or more alive,
wow.
Kept alive on the cross. And because of what he did on the cross, it said that they... A curtain in the temple was torn. By the way, a temple was over 15 stories high in Jerusalem. Can you imagine that huge curtain? It's 4 inches thick, and that is torn from top to bottom. When he's on the cross, he dies, because that was, the work is done now. God tears that curtain, and he says, now, because of the work of my son, you're invited to come right into the Holy of Holies, and you can now call me Abba, Daddy. The creator of the universe has now, because of the death of his son, says that we can now call him Daddy. And the two thieves, one repents and the other isn't. And the centurion says, oh my goodness, he is the son of God. I know we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Number 13, they take him down from the cross. This is the Pietà in St. Peter's. The Pietà was originally to be an altarpiece. And it looks like Jesus is almost dropping off of Mary's lap. That's because it was above the altar, and it's a picture of Mary giving her son as a sacrifice on the altar that you're now going to receive in the Eucharist. So they were no bones broken, because that was the prophecy. The lance went into his side. In that painting I mentioned, the raising of the cross by Rembrandt, not only is Rembrandt raising the cross, but the centurion is holding
that.
You the lance. He's saying, here, you pierce him. It's yours. He's looking right at you and handing you. If people should look it up, Rembrandt, The Raising of the Cross. It's one of my favorite paintings of all time. They knew he was dead. They didn't have to break his bones. They put the lance in his side, and out came blood and water. In other words, there's a whole typology here. When Adam and Eve were in the garden, Adam didn't have a wife, so God put him to sleep, cut open his body, took a part of his body out, created a bride. Adam woke up and loved Eve. Jesus is now in a new garden. God the Father says he needs a bride. He puts Jesus to sleep on the cross. He cuts open his side with a lance. Out comes blood and water from which he creates the church. Jesus wakes up and he loves the church. We could talk a whole hour on that. But now it's wrapped in the shroud, which we have seen. That shroud is still here because God knows that we're a visual people, especially in these end times. We like to see things, images, and he gave us a letter, the Shroud of Turin, which is a love letter written with his own blood. And Mary had wrapped him with the swaddling clothes in the manger. I'm convinced she's the one that wrapped him in the shroud at his death. Now Jesus is laid in the tomb. His body gets cold and clammy. It's a dead body. His spirit has been ripped. Death means separation, the separation of the body from the soul. And this happened to Jesus. His body's now getting cold and clammy in the tomb. He goes down to the underworld to tell everybody, guess what, folks? I did it. I'm going to take you all up to heaven with me now, those of you who are righteous. There was a man named Joseph. Jesus was born in a cave provided by a man named Joseph. He has also died in a cave provided by a man named Joseph. And it's very close to Calvary. When we're there, Vanessa, you could actually, standing on Calvary, you could throw a stone and hit the tomb. That's how close they are.
Wow.
And he was in the tomb only 3 days because the Jews said that after 4 days, corruption set in. And it said no corruption will touch his body, so he couldn't have been in there more than 3 days. But he was dead, and a soldier knew it, and the 12 disciples knew it. And Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, he explains that death and resurrection, and he said, you must believe this. This is a historical fact. If you don't believe it, you're stupid in a sense. You are a fool because we know that this was a historical fact, and you should, on the basis of reason and history, believe this whole story. It's not just a story. It is true history. It is God saving his people, and we just walked on the stations of the cross. And my last one is that I always add it is the resurrection, because you can't leave Jesus in the tomb. He comes out. And so for me, there's 15 stations of the cross and we add the resurrection.
Amen. Steve Ray, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for being with us here on Catholic Connection, walking us through the stations of the cross. God bless you. Stay with us, everyone. We're going to wrap up after this. Thank you, Steve Ray. What a wonderful way to walk us through the stations of the cross. That's definitely an interview worth sharing with other people during this Lenten season, especially as we enter Holy Week. You know, walking us through why the stations of the cross began, how they began, what are the names of them? Do we know exactly where they are? Are the stations biblical? Why is it a good idea to pray the stations? And why do our usual crucifixes do a great injustice? And then he walked us through each individual stations of the 14 stations. That was just so beautifully done. And I really appreciate Steve Ray walking us through, you know, all of them here this morning on Catholic Connection. Like I said, it's a great way to go back and re-listen to them. Share them with your friends and family. It's a great way to evangelize the faith. Share this interview with Steve Ray as you meditate on the Stations of the Cross. If you've not been through the Stations this Lenten season, I really encourage you to do so. Ronnie and I, my husband and I, have been praying with the Stations this entire Lenten season. We're going to be heading into EWTN Radio Extra, and we'll be talking with Kelly Solomon from the Newman Guide News. She'll give us an update on what's going on with the Newman Guide, and I'll also be sharing my coach's commentary. So this entire Lenten season, I've been sharing clips on social media about how do we take our faith to work with us on the job with Jesus. It's all part of a book I have coming up by Marian Press. They're just like 60 seconds of 2 minute clips. I'm going to be sharing some of that with you in my coach's commentary. Join us, EWTN Radio Extra. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's Vanessa Denha-Garmo here, Chief Communications Officer and Communications Evangelist with Epiphany Communications. I'm a professional development trainer, leadership development coach, and communication consultant with Epiphany Communications and host of Epiphany on EWTN affiliate Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Filling in for my dear sister in Christ this morning, Teresa Tomeo. Always a pleasure to be with you here. Today's saint of the day, St. Oscar Romero. We honor St. Oscar, the patron saint of persecuted Christians and a powerful witness to courage in the face of injustice. Appointed Archbishop of San Salvador in 1977, St. Romero quickly became known as the voice for the voiceless, using his radio sermons to defend the poor, the oppressed, and victims of violence during one of El Salvador's darkest periods. He knew the risk of speaking truth to power, yet he refused to be silent. On March 24, 1980, he was assassinated while celebrating Mass, martyred for proclaiming human dignity and the gospel. He was canonized in 2018 by Pope Francis. St. Oscar Romero is now recognized as a patron of El Salvador, the Americas, persecuted Christians, and Christian communicators, reminding us that faith must always move out us towards justice, mercy, and the defense of the vulnerable. So we ask St. Oscar Romero to pray for us today, especially those in Christian communication. So I'm asking intentional prayers for the work that I do here on Catholic Radio and the work I do as a facilitator and coach, Christian coach in leadership development. So pray for us, St. Oscar Romero. Today we'll be talking with Kelly Solomon here in EWTN Radio Extra on Catholic Connection. She's going to walk us through the Newman Guide, and there's so much to talk with her about here this morning. High school summer programs at the Newman Guide College, Diocese of Springfield Cape, system-wide approach to Newman Guide recognition, St. Mary's Catholic School becomes Newman Guide recommended, and how to feed students truth and reason, not ultra-processed AI. What a great conversation. And then she'll be talking, they also feature in the newsletter, Catholic Journals formed a Newman Guide College, formed at a Newman Guide College. And that's so important for journalists. And that's really near and dear to my heart. Teresa and I have talked about this so much over the years, about how so many schools are not teaching journalism in the journalism school. They're teaching activism, which is not journalism. And really, it's really sad because we have seen the industry shift from journalism to activism over the years. And T and I were talking just about this recent announcement of CBS News closing its decades-old radio network, radio news network, which I think is what a sad commentary on the industry that she and I grew up in. And I wonder if they connect the dots that if, you know, the way that they're delivering the news has impacted the decline in viewership and listenership on the network. Well, listenership regarding radio. But is there a connection? Do they do their research? Are they looking in the mirror? Are they having any kind of, you know, introspective look on how they deliver the news contributing to the demise of the radio network? I don't know. And what are the stats and research? I mean, if they were true leaders, they would do that and to figure out what really happened here. And other news outlets should take cue to this of what's happening. Can we go back to real journalism in the United States today? Are we going to continue on this road of activism? So it's great to hear that a Catholic journalist is formed at Newman Guide College. So we'll talk with Kelly Solomon about that and so much more. But it's 4 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection, and that means it's time for the news on EWTN. And we're going to start our newscast today with an update on the weather from Tammy Trio.
Starting in the northeast is a mix of sun and clouds with temperatures in the 30s in the north and the 40s in the south. The mid-Atlantic and east coast will see partly sunny skies with temperatures topping out near 50 degrees. And mild and pleasant weather continues in the southeast as highs reach the low 70s under a mix of sun and clouds. The big story is the southern plains where temperatures are surging well above average, climbing into the low 80s from Texas through Oklahoma with dry and breezy conditions. And that heat is spreading into the Midwest where temperatures jump into the 50s and 60s, especially across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. The central plains are warm and breezy with elevated fire weather concerns due to the dry and gusty winds. Sunny and hot in the southwest as temperatures are in the 90s to the low 100s. The heat is on in Southern California as well as temperatures could reach some record highs with temperatures in the 80s. Northern and central California stay mostly in the 70s. And in the Pacific Northwest, clouds and periods of rain continue, especially west of the Cascades. That's your national forecast. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
It's now day 25 of the U.S. and Israel's war against Iran. Ross Cullen reports that President Trump says the U.S. has held productive talks with Tehran, but Iran denies any discussions have taken place.
It follows remarks by U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday that Tehran was ready to make a deal to bring the war to an end. It's reported that intermediaries have been in contact to convey messages between Tehran and Washington. President Trump also mused that the Speaker of Parliament could be the U.S. pick for the new leader in Iran.
Trump has ordered a five-day pause on any attacks on Iranian power plants. The Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway that typically sees a fifth of the world's maritime oil traffic, remains closed to most vessels as Iran threatens attacks on commercial shipping. Iran also continued to fire missiles at Israel, while other Gulf nations report intercepting more Iranian drones and missiles. Fighting has intensified in Lebanon, where Israel is carrying out attacks, and in Iraq, where pro-Iranian groups are fighting the U.S. Cullen says there are reports that President Trump is looking at the Speaker of Iran's parliament as the country's potential new leader.
The health of the Supreme Leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, is unclear because since he was picked, he has released one written statement and has not been seen or heard from amid rumors that he was severely wounded in the attack which killed his father, the former Supreme Leader, at the start of the war.
Runway number 4 remains closed at LaGuardia Airport as the NTSB continues to investigate Sunday's deadly collision between Air Canada regional jet and an airport fire truck during a landing. Scott Pringle reports.
Investigators say they're going to be interviewing the air traffic controller, who could be heard saying that he messed up as he was dealing with a separate emergency. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, he was asked about the air traffic controller staffing situation.
We're a couple controllers short in total, but it is a well-staffed airport. Again, 33 certified controllers.
Data reportedly shows the plane going around 100 miles per hour as it plowed into an airport fire truck on the runway, killing the two pilots and injuring dozens of others. NTSB investigators have recovered the cockpit voice recorder and the data recorder. In New York, I'm Scott Pringle.
The TSA is losing hundreds of workers as the partial government shutdown continues. More from Mark Mayfield.
According to the Department of Homeland Security, 400 TSA workers have quit since the shutdown began on February 14th. Of the TSA officers who quit, the agency said almost half have over 3 years of experience and a third have over 5 years. The agency also noted that for more than half of last week, there was a national call-out rate of 10% at TSA. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The Los Angeles Unified School District is expected to start the process of renaming schools and include the name Cesar Chavez. Mark Mayfield also has that story. He fills us in.
Last week, several women told the New York Times that the late labor leader sexually assaulted them when they were young women and girls. Dolores Huerta, who co-founded the United Farm Workers with Chavez, now says he raped her twice. Today, the LAUSD is expected to start the process of renaming several facilities. Those include the Cesar Chavez Learning Academies in San Fernando and the Cesar Chavez Elementary School in El Sereno. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Sunday, March 22nd, marked the end of the public veneration of St. Francis's remains exposed for a month in the Lower Church of the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi. This was the first time his relics were displayed, and more than 370,000 pilgrims from all over the world came to see them. Public veneration was part of several events scheduled this year to commemorate the 800th anniversary of the saint's death. In the evening, after the last pilgrims had passed through, the saint's remains were placed back in the crypt of the Basilica in a private event only attended by the friars, which marked the end of the public veneration. Nonetheless, it seems St. Francis Lives will continue throughout 2026. It will accompany all the initiatives marking the 800th anniversary of the saint's death, highlighting the enduring vitality of his message and his ability to speak to all. Gas prices keep rising across Southern California as the war in Iran continues. Mark Mayfield has the numbers.
AAA now says the average price for a gallon of self-serve regular in Los Angeles County is $5.90. On average, it's 4 cents less expensive in Orange County. In Ventura County, gas is going for $5.82. It's $5.76 in San Bernardino County. In Riverside County, the average price for a gallon of gas is $5.77. I'm Mark Mayfield.
An Irish immigrant who helped shape the heart of America history is being honored in Washington, D.C. The Irish Embassy recently celebrated James Hoban, the architect who designed and oversaw construction of the White House, as part of events leading up to America's 250th anniversary. This from EWTN News. Ireland's ambassador, Geraldine Byrne-Nason, highlighted Hoban's legacy, noting that his Irish immigrants left what she called Irish fingerprints on America's founding. Historians say Hoban relied on fellow Irish workers and enslaved laborers to complete the mansion in 1800. After the British burned it down, the War of 1812, Hoban returned to rebuild it. Hoban also helped establish St. Patrick's Church, the oldest Catholic church in the nation's capital, and contributed to major federal buildings, including the U.S. Capitol. The White House Historical Association honored Hoban at his gravesite this week, and the Irish Embassy has opened a new exhibit, the Emerald Thread, showcasing Ireland's influence on America's early story. Here's Mark Mayfield once again with the latest technology news.
OpenAI is reportedly planning on nearly doubling its workforce by the end of the year. The Financial Times reports that the ChatGPT creator is looking to increase its staff from roughly 4,500 to about 8,000. The move reportedly to keep up with or stay ahead of the competition, like Anthropic PBC and Alphabet Incorporated. Demonstrators gathered outside of Anthropic's San Francisco headquarters on Saturday, demanding a stop to artificial intelligence development, at least temporarily. Representatives with the group Stop the AI Race say that they are seriously concerned about the threat that AI poses to the human race. Meta stock took a hit after the collapse of the Metaverse last week. The Facebook parent announced it would no longer be adding virtual reality experiences to the platform, marking a halt to the once ambitious Mark Zuckerberg project. And Amazon reportedly looking to dive back into the smartphone pool. Reports say Amazon's developing a new device known around the company as the Transformer. Reuters reports that the generative AI built into the device would essentially eliminate any need for an app store. Tech Report, I'm Mark Mayfield.
DoorDash says it'll help U.S. and Canadian delivery drivers facing big gasoline bills during the Iran war. The company says the program will run through April 26th and can save drivers at least $1 per gallon. It will also feature weekly relief payments for Dashers driving at least 125 miles. With the average price of the gas in America expected to break $4 this week, gig workers are being hit hard. Stock futures are surging the morning after President Trump announced the U.S. has held constructive talks with Iran will hold off targeting Iranian energy infrastructure. At least at last check, Dow futures were up 1,200 points or 2.6%. S&P 500 futures were up 170 points, also about 2.6%, while NASDAQ futures had risen 620 points, more than 2.5%. We're heading into the next segment. It'll be my coach's commentary after the break. How do we take our faith to work with us? We all should know ways to do this. We'll be right back after this. So it's time for my coach's commentary here on Catholic Connection. And as I've shared with you, I have been featuring little snippets on my social media platforms about how to take our faith to work with us, called On the Job with Jesus. And it's part of two things. My book coming out by Marian Press this year, 7 Christian Habits for Professional Success on the Job with Jesus, and a class I'm teaching through an affiliate of EWTN, Guadalupe Radio Network Academy. The first class is April 18th. It's a Saturday. So I'll be teaching 7 weeks starting April 18th, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock Eastern time, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern. And I know that's kind of early, but grab your coffee. It'll be well worth it. I'm going to be sharing with you 7 Christian habits for professional success, how to be on the job with Jesus everywhere you go. So I wanted to share with you some of the little tips I've been sharing on my social media platforms, and you can find me everywhere on LinkedIn, TikTok, on Instagram, on X, Communications Evangelist Vanessa Dentagarmo on Facebook. So I am a chief communications officer with Epiphany Communications and a communications evangelist. I do leadership development coaching and team building and growth mindset coaching. I absolutely love it, a strengths coaching. And so I wanted to share with you some of the ways I've been sharing with people of how to take their faith to work with them. And there's many ways we can do these. So let's talk about when silence is not an option. This is a way to take your faith to work with you. Sometimes silence is not an option, okay? In the workplace, it can be very uncomfortable to speak up when you witness injustice, unfairness, or outright wrongdoing. And this really ties in today's feast day with the saint of today and what he did, a patron of Christian communicators, because he truly took his faith to work with him. Every single day, the bishop took his faith to work with him because he wasn't afraid to speak up, right? And that was St. Oscar Romero. And that's what I want to talk to you about, of how we cannot be afraid to speak up when we witness injustice, unfairness, or outright wrongdoing, sometimes bullying in the workplace. Fear, intimidation, or confusion can tempt us to stay quiet. But as Christians, we're called to seek truth, do our homework, and respond with courage, not hostility, but conviction. Now, I'm not talking about arguing with everyone you disagree with. No. Timing really does matter, and prudence matters. But remaining neutral on serious issues is often the easier path, but it's not the faithful one. Jesus is clear about this. Whoever's not with me is against me, and whoever does not gather with me scatters. So let's think about that. Neutrality, especially when someone's being mistreated or bullied, becomes a form of negligence, especially from leaders. And this affects your bottom line. I wrote my thesis paper on this in my master's program in communications on bullies in the workplace. And this truly does affect a company's bottom line. Being on the job with Jesus, but it goes deeper for us as Christians. Being on the job with Jesus means examining the moments when fear tempts us into silence. Avoidance isn't peacekeeping, it's passivity. Charity calls us to speak the truth in love, even when it's uncomfortable. So we can ask the Holy Spirit to guide us. Is your silence rooted in wisdom or in fear? We have to really discern this. This is why self-awareness is so important. We grow in self-awareness every single day. We grow closer to Christ. So we stand with Christ in every situation, trusting that he is stronger than any opposition you face. Because we're going to face opposition. We're going to face injustice. We're going to face unfairness. We're going to see bullies and witness them in the workplace. But we can't idly stand by and say, oh, well, that's okay. I'm going to accept watching the bully and be a bystander. And I talk about that. There's a ton of research on bystanders in the workplace. And it's not acceptable to just stand by and watch somebody being unfairly treated, especially when they're being bullied. Now I want to walk into the strength of saying, you know what? I was wrong. You know, I didn't get that right. And it's sometimes very difficult for us to admit this. You know, why is it so hard for us to say, you know what? I'm sorry. I was wrong. I made a mistake. In leadership, words can feel risky for some, right? We fear losing credibility or appearing weak. But the truth is the opposite. Admitting our mistakes is one of the strongest things a leader can do. Jesus consistently modeled humility. And we see this in the Gospel of Matthew. He says, "Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart." If the Son of God leads with humility, why do we think we must lead with perfection? Authenticity builds trust. Vulnerability builds connections. When leaders pretend to have all the answers, people see through it. But when leaders say, "You know what? I missed the mark," respect really grows. Teams relax. Honesty becomes the culture. If Jesus were speaking to leaders today, I imagine he would say, "Do not be afraid of the truth. The truth will set you free." Owning your mistakes doesn't diminish your authority. It really, truly deepens it. It shows your team that integrity matters more than image. So today, reflect on when pride may be holding you back. And ask the Holy Spirit for the courage to be honest and the humility to apologize and the wisdom to grow. Strong leaders aren't perfect. Strong leaders are teachable. So if you made a mistake in the workplace, you will earn the respect of everybody around you if you admit you made the mistake and correct it. Don't make excuses. Admit the mistake and correct it. And then learn to ask good questions. If you made a mistake, you can even say, "How could I have done that better?" Did you know that Jesus asked more than 300 questions in the Gospels? Think about that. The Son of God, the one who knows everything, used questions more than anything else. Not lectures, not long speeches. He used questions. Now, as a facilitator and a coach, this really fascinates me. I've spent my entire career asking questions. First as a reporter, then a talk show host, and now in my work with leaders and teams. Questions are how we uncover truth, challenge assumptions, and spark transformation. But long before the Socratic method, Jesus modeled it perfectly. And Teresa and I have been talking about this for years. Instead of arguing with people, ask them questions. Ask them to help you understand why they do what they do. Why do they believe what they believe? Where do they get their information? What's blocking them? What are they so afraid of? You know, what do they hope to accomplish? You know, we got to seek to understand people, and we do that by asking them questions. Now, Jesus didn't ask questions because he needed answers. He asked them because we need them. It's not because he needed the answers. He knew the answers. He was trying to pull the answers out of us. His questions open the heart. They expose what's hidden. They invite us to look honestly at ourselves. This is self-introspection. This is about self-awareness. This is what I love about coaching, because I have question-guided conversations to help pull information out of my clients so they can have these epiphany moments and see where the Lord is leading them. In the Gospel of Matthew alone, Jesus asks questions that go straight to the core of our human struggles, our worries, our fears, our judgments, our anxious thoughts. Can any of you, by worrying at a single moment to your lifespan? Jesus asked that. He says, "Why are you anxious about your clothes?" Jesus asked, "Why do you notice the splint in your brother's eye but fail to perceive the wooden beam in your own?" Jesus asked, "Why are you terrified?" Jesus asked, "Why do you harbor evil thoughts?" These aren't rhetorical. They're invitations, gentle but piercing. They help us examine our conscience, confront our fears, and see where we're placing our trust. So as a coach, I've learned that the most important questions are the ones we ask ourselves. Jesus gives us the template. His questions guide us inward towards honesty, humility, and ultimately toward him. These are just three samples of how to take your faith to work with you. Just take them to prayer and really ask the Lord, "How can I bring you with me everywhere I go?" We got to take a break here on Catholic Connection. When we come back, Kelly Solomon with the Newman God will be joining us. Don't go away. Here at Catholic Connection, and joining us as a regular guest of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, and often with my own show Epiphany, Kelly Solomon's with us from the Newman Guide. Kelly, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Vanessa. Great to be on.
there's so much to talk with you about, and we're going to kind of run through your latest newsletter because it's filled with a wealth of information. So let's talk about what's new with the Newman Guide and how school summer programs at the Newman Guide, high school summer programs at the Newman Guide colleges. Walk us kind of through that.
Yes. So we put out this monthly newsletter. Families are welcome to sign up for it on our website, cardinalnewmansociety.org. We send out the latest happening with the Newman Guide and with Catholic education through the newsletter. So as you mentioned, the top article we feature is high school summer programs at Newman Guide colleges. And really, what better way for a high school student to spend a week or two this summer at a Newman Guide college? And these programs are a great opportunity for them to get a taste of what faithful Catholic education is all about. But also to strengthen their academic and extracurricular skills, grow in their spiritual life, get a head start on college visits, make lifelong friends, and have a lot of fun. And so we have a whole roundup article on our website going through every Newman Guide college and what their summer program offerings are, even a printable ebook with a quick sheet with all of the dates and locations of all of these programs so that Catholic families can review it and find ones that are going to be the best fit for them.
So, Kelly, what are some of the kind of programs like for the high school summer programs in the Newman Guide colleges? What do they offer? Can you kind of give us an overview of some of them?
Sure. So Belmont Abbey College's Scola program is very popular. This cultivates a true life of leisure over a one-week session in July. Students build friendships. They attend classes with professors. They enjoy time to relax and socialize. They go whitewater rafting. They go rock climbing. And they join in the daily prayer of the monks on campus. So that's one example of a wonderful Newman Guide summer program. Another summer program that's very popular is Christendom College's The Best Week Ever, is what they've named their summer program. They have five different one-week sessions throughout June and July. And again, experiencing true friendship, Catholic culture, the beauty of God's creation in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. Students attend daily classes, then they go on hiking and other outdoor adventures. They learn to swing dance and forge friendships. And one student told me, when I first heard about it, I thought the best week ever was just an advertisement, but I truly did have the best week of my life.
Wow. It sounds like it's a lot of team building, too. Fellowship, team building.
Is.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Absolutely. You know, there's so many great options everywhere from Ave Maria University to Benedictine College. Franciscan University, of course, has their summer conferences, Steubenville conferences that students can attend all over the country. They do have some on their location in Steubenville. And then even some of our newer colleges that we've just added to the Newman Guide. I'm thinking in particular of Catholic Institute of Technology in Italy is offering a summer program for high school students who are looking to get a taste of a science and engineering and mathematics from a truly Catholic perspective, while, of course, experiencing all the best of what Italy has to offer.
Wow. So does that College of Technology have a, like, a design branch to it? Like, I'm being selfishly asking. My daughter wants to do interior design, and she wants to study in Italy. I'm like, ooh, that would be great. I got to look that up.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, some of those types of degrees might be offered at John Paul the Great Catholic University. Catholic Institute of Technology, their summer programs in particular are focused on computer science and then introduction to space sciences and engineering.
Gotcha.
But it's very fascinating to see how they're covering these scientific topics from this
Catholic
perspective.
I love it. I love the fact that so many of these colleges are taking all these subjects that you see in the secular schools and looking at them from the lens of a Catholic. It's so important. But my daughter said to me, I really want to study in Italy for a little bit, Mom. And I'm like, well, let me find the right college for you. Let me see where
Absolutely.
You can go.
Vanessa, you and I should continue that conversation.
Yeah, offline. We're inviting the whole listening audience to talk about my daughter's academic life. That's an offline conversation, Kelly. Let's talk about more of what you have going on in the newsletter, the Diocese of Springfield. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is very exciting. A new thing we're doing with the Newman Guide. As you know, we've expanded the Newman Guide to include K-12 schools in addition to the colleges and graduate programs we recommend. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is we're actually working with a number of dioceses at the diocesan level to go through the Newman Guide application process in order to streamline it for all of the schools in their diocese. So we work with them to see if they have the curriculum standards and the policy standards we're looking for in all of the Catholic schools we review for the Newman Guide. And once a diocese has gone through this process, the schools have a very simple, streamlined application to become Newman Guide recommended. So we just completed this with the third diocese, and we have several others we're working with and are excited to welcome many schools from their diocese into the Newman Guide in the coming weeks.
So tell us about this diocese in particular.
Yeah, so this is the Diocese of Springfield, Cape Girardeau.
Okay.
And this is really a monumental step because we've reviewed their entire curriculum, all of the policies that they have, all of the schools in their diocese include in their handbooks, everything from their admissions policy to their athletics policy to the moral requirements they expect of their Catholic teachers. And so we have reviewed all of that, and now the schools in the diocese can apply individually because there are some particular things we review at the school level. But most of the work has been done by the diocese. So it's a very exciting thing to see these really strong dioceses who have incorporated such excellent and faithfully Catholic policies and curriculum standards that all of their schools are using.
That's wonderful. We're talking with Kelly Newman, Kelly Solomon from the Newman Guide, their wonderful newsletter that they put out, giving us updates on what they have going on in terms of, for instance, the high school summer program we just talked about at Newman Guide Colleges. And then St. Mary's Catholic School becomes a Newman Guide recommended. Tell us about, this is the latest school. Is this the one of the newest or just highlighting the school?
Exactly. Okay. Yes, this is one of the latest to become Newman Guide recommended. Every newsletter, every month, we feature the latest schools that have been Newman Guide recommended. We've added 10 K-12 Catholic schools since going to print with this edition of the Newman Guide, so our list is growing rapidly. And St. Mary's in Hagerstown, Maryland has been around since 1874. And this school offers a wonderful, faithful Catholic education for 200 students. Students attend daily Mass, frequent opportunities for adoration and confession. And so St. Mary's is the second school within the state of Maryland and the 38th school overall to become Newman Guide recommended at the K-12 level.
That's wonderful, and it's great to highlight that, and I'm sure it encourages when other schools see that they want to be part of this Newman Guide. I hope, Kelly, that they would encourage a lot of Catholic schools to, you know, change the way that they share deliver their curriculum, that they could be part of the Newman Guide. I mean, do you see more and more colleges and schools K-12 wanting to be part of the Newman Guide?
Oh, absolutely. Especially since releasing this edition of the Newman Guide in print, we have about 100 K-12 schools currently in the application process. And you're right, it's so interesting when schools come in and, you know, they become the second school in the state of Maryland. We often see more schools from the state of Maryland than looking into applying to be in the Newman Guide.
Stay with us. Kelly Solomon is going to continue the conversation with us here on Catholic Connection. Don't go away. Continuing our conversation with Kelly Solomon here on Catholic Connection about the Newman Guide, going through their wonderful newsletter. And you have an article here, Kelly, about how to feed students truth and reason, not ultra-processed AI. I love that. Talk to us about that.
Yes, this is a big topic in Catholic education today. Dr. Sanford at the University of Dallas is planning to join for one of these segments coming up, and he has been outspoken about artificial intelligence, its impact on education, and how a really Catholic education is the best formation we can give students for the changing world we face today. This article we include in our magazine is from our own Dr. Dan Guernsey. He's a senior fellow at the Cardinal Newman Society, and he also directs Ave Maria University's Master in Catholic Educational Leadership. And I really encourage listeners to go and check out this full article, How to Feed Students Truth and Reason, Not Ultra-Processed AI, just to be aware of how the changing landscape is impacting the formation of young students and how we shouldn't use education as an experiment, that we should use time-tested ways to educate young people. Mm-hmm. Another great resource, Vanessa, on this topic is Thomas Aquinas College is putting out a podcast. They have a whole 10 series episodes already on AI and Catholic education and how Catholics can navigate this issue in our modern world today.
And so, you know, I love this, and because it's such an important topic, it's not going away, Kelly.
Right.
We have to address AI, especially from the lens of a Catholic. So I think this is wonderful that Dr. Guernsey is addressing this and collaborating with Cardinal Newman Society about this issue. This is going to be an ongoing conversation for obviously years and decades to come.
It changes every day.
Yeah, it does.
And how can Catholics lead on this issue?
Rapidly. Yeah, it's changing rapidly. And we do want to lead, you know, and we want to look at AI from the lens of a Catholic. Catholic Journals formed at a Newman Guide College. I love this. Very near and dear to my heart. Teresa and I have talked about this for years, about how secular colleges are, you know, using J schools, journalism schools, to really educate or develop advocates instead of journalists. And this is very concerning. Can you talk to us about this article?
Absolutely. I knew you would like this one, Vanessa. Jack Figg is a student in the master's program at Benedictine College in Kansas, and he earned his undergraduate degree there as well. And he said professionally, teachers really helped him connect with leaders in Catholic media, and the school served as a launching pad for his career into journalism. Professors and friends have been so supportive of his writing and ambitions and have sought to provide ideas for stories or be available for interviews. And I love that real personal touch that you get at a Newman Guide College, where the professors and your peers are invested in helping you be successful with whatever career path you're choosing. He also goes on to say that Benedictine College taught him what it means to live a human and live a full life, surrounded by the tradition of the faith, phenomenal students and faculty. It's taught me that there's more to life than just money and promotions. It's shown me the importance of community and pushed me to develop rich friendships that go beyond surface level matters.
Hmm. You know, that's really important. He's doing something really important here, and I absolutely love it. And that education is so important. And I think that if people want to go into journalism, they really do seriously need to consider Catholic college for that, because I have spoken to so many people. I had a friend of mine who is a long time, very successful, very talented journalist, who said that he was a guest speaker at a top 10 college in the J school. I'm not going to name it. And he said that he said when he was there, the whole conversation, he goes, was about being activists and not journalists. And it was really concerning. And I'm like, this is not what we should be educating kids on, how to be activists. We should be educating kids on how to be journalists. So I love this article, Kelly. Let's talk about Wake Up Call. Students say hookups, heartbreak, shape dating at Seton Hall.
So this is a section we include in our Wake Call every month in our newsletter to just draw attention to the issues. As you were mentioning it, so many colleges' ideologies are being pushed on students and are being pushed into activism. Oftentimes it runs contrary to our faith. And so we include these wake-up calls to shed a light on that there are so many issues in Catholic education and in secular education today, and you have to be very careful and discerning when seeking out education. And so here in this wake-up call, we included an article from Seton Hall University student newspaper. We have a strong journalism theme in this newsletter this month. A student wrote, "Students say hookups, heartbreak, shape dating at Seton Hall." And one freshman said, is summarized by the author saying he considers it easier to find someone looking for something casual rather than serious. Mariana Soler, a senior, agrees with Harrison. "It's a big hookup culture freshman year immediately," she said. "Everybody's hooking up with everybody, and it's just that, like, new freedom." And so I think this is really a heartbreaking article to read of students admitting that, you know, it's a really dismal dating scene at this Catholic university, a very big hookup culture. And so it raises questions, you know, are there colleges where students can still find evidence of mature, chaste relationships that lead to healthy marriages? You know, where can you find communities and no place is going to be perfect, but where can you find communities and institutions that are going to have some guardrails up, that are going to be providing you with frequent opportunities for wholesome, good activities, that are going to provide a more healthy dating experience on campus?
Yeah. You know, that's such an important conversation. And, you know, it's something that kids, it may be hard to discuss, but we can't like ignore the elephant in the room, right? Type of thing. You know, it's a touchy right. conversation, but they need to be having. And I bet you, you know, how are the students reacting to being open about this conversation? I'm sure many of them are just so frustrated that they don't want this kind of culture.
Right. Yes. They were like, yeah, this is just kind of how it is. And, you know, not, it didn't seem like in the article that all of them were really enjoying this culture, that this is just what the culture has become.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, where are the colleges that are touting their number of alumni marriages? Where are the colleges that are putting into place reasonable dorm policies that are helping promote a culture of chastity?
Yeah.
Where are the colleges that are bringing on excellent speakers and events to promote a healthy understanding of dating and relationships? You know, seek those things out, too, and see if the Catholic college or secular college you're sending your children to is going to provide those opportunities to really provide them with a wholesome experience.
Yeah. Kelly Solomon, great points there. And let's talk about Liberty University gets day in court. This is also in your newsletter.
Yes. You know, the Cardinal Newman Society, we promote and we defend faithful Catholic education. And so we promote all the Newman Guide institutions and the great things we're doing. But we also help defend them against threats to their Catholic identity. And so this is where our religious freedom work comes in. And we submitted an amicus brief in this particular case. So here's a little bit of background. So this case was just heard on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. And what the situation is Liberty University is a Christian college in Virginia. They terminated an employee's employment after he violated the college's doctrinal statements that declare human beings are created as either biologically male or female from the womb. Right after his 90-day probation period, this employee revealed that he had started taking female hormones 4 months before he was hired and wanted to identify as female. This whole situation seems designed to force Liberty University to compromise its religious beliefs. And so arguing on behalf of Liberty University at the court, Liberty Counsel said, if a single employee can supplant an employer's religious beliefs by forcing it to conform to the employee's worldview, then no faith-based employer will survive. Religious institutions must have the freedom to live out their faith authentically, lest they become indistinguishable from secular institutions. So if, you know, if this employee gets away with it, faithful Catholic schools and colleges will surely be targeted next. And so this is why the Cardinal Newman Society got involved. We joined with other groups advocating for the rights of Christian educators and filing this amicus brief in the court. This case is currently being considered and will likely end up as a Supreme Court case. So we'll keep you posted on the outcome of this, but it's very important to see, you know, can an institution hire and retain employees who are publicly upholding the values that they're signing on to when they agree to come and work for an institution?
Yeah, those are really good points. And, you know, things that are going on in the secular world, Catholic colleges have to be cognizant of it because it could affect the colleges and go against the teachings of the church. So thanks for sharing that with us, Kelly. These are, you know, important issues happening in the culture today.
Absolutely. You know, that Catholic colleges need to be prepared, that that many schools and colleges are facing lawsuits, and they need to be upfront with their mission and proudly proclaim their mission and all that they do. And that gives a better understanding to everyone who's joining into that mission of, these are the expectations. This is what we're expected to uphold as an employee of the institution. And then in turn, the institution needs to proudly proclaim that mission and live it out in all that it does, and should be protected from cases like this where they're able to hire and retain employees who are indeed doing that.
So I know that there was a Belmont Abbey College's podcast is featuring the president of the Cardinal Newman Society. Tell us about that.
Yes, this is a wonderful conversation with Dr. Joe Wysocki, provost of Belmont Abbey College, and our president, Patrick Riley. On the case for college in a skeptical age. And Vanessa, this goes back to the AI topic we were talking about earlier. There's so many changing such a changing landscape in our world today. You know, as parents look at college, is college really worth it? Will my student get a job after graduation? What does the future look like? Should we be, you know, focused on technology or preparing for the changing world? And so they really get to the heart of what Catholic education is all about, forming the person for this life and for the next life, and how those critical thinking skills, being able to speak and communicate, that get at the heart of Catholic education and will prepare students for whatever calling God is asking them to do in this life.
Kelly, we have about a minute left with you here on Catholic Connection. What else do you want to share with our listeners here?
You know, I go back to what we talked about, Vanessa, at the very beginning. Our summer programs for high school students at Newman Guide Colleges, a really wonderful way for students to spend a week or two at a Newman Guide College this summer. I've heard from many students who aren't maybe planning to attend a Newman Guide College, but they at least get to get a taste of what it's all about by spending a week at one this summer. So I encourage families, as they're making their summer plans, review our roundup of all of the different options that exist in our country and even abroad, for students to taste the classes, make real Catholic friendships, dive deeper into the liberal arts, and experience the fun and social time at a faithful Catholic college. So they can check that all out at cardinalnewmansociety.org.
Kelly, always a pleasure being with you. Thank you for joining us and sharing with us all the wonderful things going on at the Cardinal Newman Society. And thank you for all your good work.
Thank you, Vanessa. Appreciate the conversation with you. Keep up your great work.
Great. Give out your website one more time.
CardinalNewmanSociety.org, and Newman is N-E-W-M-A-N.
CardinalNewmanSociety.org. Kelly Solomon here with us on Catholic Connection. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Vanessa. Take care. God bless.
Good. We're going to wrap up this hour after the break, and I appreciate Kelly Solomon being with us as always here on Catholic Connection, as she is with Teresa Tamio. Don't go away. We're going to wrap up and talk about who's coming up on Catholic Connection tomorrow. Thank you to Kelly Solomon from the Newman Guide News for being with us here today on Catholic Connection. Always a pleasure to fill in for Teresa Tamio. And as a communications evangelist and coach, I really want to encourage you to think about how to take your faith to work with you every single day, being on the job with Jesus. And join me for my course I'm teaching with Guadalupe Radio Network Academy starting April 18th. Would love to see you there. It's a 7-week course on how to take your faith to work with you and how to lead from a Christian perspective. I'd love to share all those tips with all of you. All part of a book I have coming out by Marian Press later this year. Andrew Laubacher will be on tomorrow of Humanality, Digital Detox, and Friar Luca de Pascal, the success of the St. Francis Relics exhibit in Assisi. Teresa will talk with him about that. Teresa will also be talking with Bill Donahue about his book, Catholics and the Crosshairs. That's all coming up on Catholic Connection tomorrow with Teresa. She's back in her host chair. I will be filling in again on Friday with you here on Catholic Connection. Always a pleasure to be with all of you. Here I'll be sharing more tips on how to take our faith to work with us, being on the job with Jesus, because guess what? We cannot compartmentalize our lives. Christians must put Christ at the center of everything that we do, and how we show up, how and how we communicate creates the cultures in which we live and work. We got to think about that every single day. Pleasure to be with you. As always, I like to remind my listeners to connect, communicate, and collaborate with the Catholic community. We are your Catholic radio station. Don't go away. There's more to come here on EWTN.